Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, friends. It's Sarah Michelle. And today on the Successful-ish podcast, we are talking to the fabulous Kenyon Thorpe, co-owner of the Ideal Theater and Bar, one of my favorite places, and a beautiful example of core values on display. A brief history, the Ideal Theater and Bar opened in October of 2022. It is a family enterprise owned by Kenyon Thorpe, Kansas Thorpe, and their father, Jim Thorpe. Try saying that three times fast. Kenyon oversees the day-to-day operations and books all of the shows and events. The Ideal was open to provide something new to the Cedar Rapids, Iowa area, a dedicated live music and entertainment venue. The Ideal exists to give you a reason to dress up, go out, and enjoy yourself. I love that. And with a jam-packed slate of events and shows, there is always something going on at the Ideal and always something to do with your evening. And on top of that, as a little bonus, as a smaller venue, they are able to offer an intimate atmosphere at a friendly price point. The Thorpe family shares a deep affinity for camaraderie, merrymaking, music, and dancing. And when you step into the Ideal, you step into their world, and they promise you will have a lot of fun there. So today we are talking to Kenyon, who has worked in bars and restaurants for nearly 20 years. And at the last place she managed, she was booking a lot of the live music and instantly realized that the entertainment side of the industry was where she was truly meant to be. So shortly thereafter, her family and her set about to open a full-fledged entertainment venue and bar. And when I first moved to Cedar Rapids, the Ideal was the first place I immediately gravitated to. It was gorgeous and a little bit mysterious. Was it a theater? Was it a club? I had no idea what it was, but I knew I wanted it to be part of or one of my local go-to hangouts. So I wandered in, and one of their very talented bartenders told me a little bit about the history of the place and how it has been restored to its 1920s glory. And it is seriously one of the most gorgeous buildings I've ever been in. And part of the decor are the ideals that are meant to be lived out in this gorgeous venue: freedom, beauty, truth, and love. And you can see these values really loudly echoed throughout every aspect of the business, including the people running it. One thing I noticed immediately as I started going to these various events, I noticed that equally as eye-catching as the building was this chick, Kenyon. She was always there and seemingly everywhere, making drinks, clearing tables, picking up trash, checking on people, always smiling and looking absolutely flawless. And the way that she carried herself, both confident and charismatic, but also not at all shy of getting her hands dirty, I just had a feeling she was the owner. And I think that's a very special skill to be able to carry yourself in a way that you draw attention to yourself and identify yourself as someone who is taking the lead, but not because you are on the stage or being served, but because you are picking up trash or balancing trays or assisting talent while in heels and a dress. She just has this way of embodying these ideals and really radiates out these cool vibes that just make you want to awkwardly ask her to be your friend. So Kenyon, thank you for being here today. And I will admit that is a lot of why you were on the podcast, is just because I think you're cool and I wanted to talk to you.
Well, thank you, darling. My ego doesn't need to get any bigger than it already is, but I'll take it.
Well, I am so excited to learn more about the Ideal. Before we jump into the conversation, what is something that you failed at this week?
That's a great question. I feel like there's something every day that doesn't quite go, you know, the way that you want it to. And part of being a small business owner and being in a position of leadership, you know, there's a certain personality type that's drawn to that. And it's a personality type that typically likes to have control. And a big part of this journey is learning to relinquish some of that control and to fall back, you know, on the people that I have around me. And, with that said, there's a certain amount of obviously trust that you have to have when you do that. And sometimes people can let you down. And, I just had a little issue this week with, you know, I just had a gal in a position and it just didn't really quite work out and we had to part ways. And I felt like at first I felt like maybe, you know, I had done something wrong there, but I think that that's a real journey for me. I have to learn to, I think I did something right in learning to let go a little bit. It didn't work out, but that's okay. That's part of building your team. And truth be told, there was another gal who jumped up to kind of take over the position, and I'm already very pleased. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. It's actually been kind of a bit of a week, I gotta say. But you know, mainly from that standpoint that I kind of just laid out, you know, is learning how to be a leader, you know, and part of that is relinquishing control, and it doesn't always work out, and that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
So
I feel like that delegation is one of the biggest challenges for anyone who owns a business, because it's your baby, it's your name on the reputation. And so I feel like that's something that we want to hold so close, but also can't do it all ourselves. So it's that constant push and pull. And I think what's really interesting about the business you run too, is that you're managing the brand and reputation of a business, of a building, but you also have to manage all these different personalities of the people who represent you, who are working there, the people who are the talent who come in. I know there's a ton of like open jam sessions, karaoke. So you have no idea who the talent is before they show up on stage. So how do you manage all of those different personalities?
Okay, that is a fantastic question. So what I do is 100% person-based. It's 100% based on the personality behind the bar and the personality on the stage. So we do not have a kitchen. That was not my intention. We already have a plethora of fantastic locally owned dining establishments in this town, and I'm here to complement those with entertainment. So I don't have a product. I don't have a food menu to put in front of you. What I have are people to put in front of you, and because of that, it makes it a lot. There's a lot of variables with what I do. I will say, I think I think a strength of mine is that I'm able to get people to come together in a way that everybody has a place. And that's a big, big vision of the Ideal. So I don't know if you've noticed this. So you said you've been to some events at the Ideal. That's amazing. If you've noticed that I keep a really wide variety of musical genres, of even just of different types of events. We've had comedy there. We've had open jams. We've had bands. We were supposed to, unfortunately, we had a circus show that was going to happen this weekend that they canceled their leg of the tour due to a family emergency. So that unfortunately is off for this weekend, but we were scheduled to have that. So the point is that actually when you bring together a lot of different people, they tend to kind of fall, everything kind of tends to fall into place in a way that when you are just targeting a certain niche of people, then you end up with people that are largely the same. And you can get overlapping personalities and rivalries. But when you really strive to bring together people of different backgrounds and different tastes, in my experience, it's a lot easier to have people just get along and find their way than it is when you really go after a particular niche or a particular market.
Which is really interesting, because I feel like, particularly coming from a corporate background, diversity is sort of one of those scary words where everyone knows they need to check the box. Everyone kind of understands in theory the beauty of diversity, but also there's this fear of, well, if we bring in all these different beliefs, personalities, alignments, there's going to be conflict. And so we tend to gravitate towards like, what's like me, let's everyone be the same. So how have you seen just that diversity come together? How does that play out through the values or the ideals that you have, and kind of how do you prioritize diversity in a way that is truly authentic and not just forced box checking?
That's a fit. See, and that's it right there. That's it right there, is that you, it's not, unfortunately, it's become so politicized and I think weaponized and just triggering. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, this country was settled by a wildly different peoples. And, you know, and even just the history of the ideal itself, which I'd love to get into, but, you know, that's, it's down in the, in New Bohemia district, which was, as you may know, founded by the, kind of the, immigrants from the Czech Republic area, the Bohemians, if you will. And so automatically, it has a really rich history of being a place, where different people of different backgrounds come together. And really, I mean, when that happens, there's a certain, how do I say this? There's a certain expectation that you have to set that, hey, you know, you're going to come into this place and there are going to be people here who are different from you. And as long as you're open and welcoming, everything's going to work out. And it's when we begin to, I think, put labels on things and like I, as I was talking about, you know, really targeting a, I don't know, a specific niche, or, you know, you talk about corporate diversity. Well, I feel like it's forced in a lot of ways that they go after, right? A certain, we got to get this certain niche in here, this certain, you know, whatever, you know, whatever it is, black, white, different religions, you know, different sexual orientation. We've got to get those in here to fulfill, you know, this diversity, you know, vision. And when you force it like that, you automatically take, I think, the emphasis on togetherness away, and you just, and it becomes this mathematical equation, and it just, and you take the humanity out of it, I think, when you do that. You know, a lot of people, I come from a pretty conservative background, to be perfectly honest. And it was always not in a sense that, you know, we were really hyper religious or anything, but just kind of a background where, you know, we're all children of God, basically. And it's easy. It's really a lot easier than it has become, it seems, in recent years. So yeah, and you just have to, and, you know, the second that you walk into the ideal, you know, as you say, I'm there a lot, right? I can't be there all the time. I'm going to have to be able to step away at some point. But the staff that I employ, I don't even require anything as far as experience, as far as any sort of, whether you're male, female, black, white, whatever it is. What I require is an openness and a willingness to learn and engage. That's it. That's really it. So when I do my hiring, I sit down and we'll have an hour interview and I'll fill you out. And then I hire you based on, you know, based almost exclusively on that. So I, you know, I really go, again, I feel like I keep giving you super long-winded answers to your questions, but they're great questions. I could sit here and talk about this all day.
Okay. And I think that's a good point too, of, you know, I think that a lot of times we are naturally a little bit tribal as people, right? We're uncomfortable being uncomfortable. Yeah. We want to be around something that feels safe. And I think a lot of times in my experience, it's not even about not wanting to hear a different perspective or things like that. I think it's just this inherent safety reflex of, well, if I'm around someone who believes differently than me, what if there's tension? And to your point, it's been very politicized. There's been a lot of kind of arguments back and forth. And I think that it's so important to have those safe spaces where it's okay for you to share a different belief or perspective or opinion. And I don't have to go into that immediate tension, fight or flight mode. I can kind of chillax a little bit, listen, process, and then share mine. And I think that that is a lot of the strength behind putting someone's name in front of ideals or values rather than other niche categories. And I really want to jump into this conversation, but before I get too far ahead, share a little bit about the history and the story, both of the building, because I know that that has kind of a fun history. It had a few lives before you came into it. And then also a little bit more of your story of how did you find yourself in this entertainment space?
Sure, absolutely. So I love talking about the story of the building. So the building was built in 1914 as a silent film theater. Also at that time, that would have been the Great War. World War I was going on at that time. And it would also have been a place for the Czech-speaking people to come and get their news. They showed newsreels in the Czech language when it was a theater. But it only lasted for about 6 years. It closed down in 1920. Apparently, there were many other theaters in the area at the time. The Olympic was one of them, which, as you may know, there's now the Olympic Theater down in the area as well. Now, that is not the original location of the Olympic, but that name pays homage to the Olympic Theater. Anyway, it was actually one of the smaller theaters. It just got outcompeted and it closed down. And apparently at one point in its life, it was a sort of a supermarket kind of a thing. A lot of people who grew up in Cedar Rapids remember it as Bjornson's paint store. It was just a storage building, essentially. A gentleman by the name of John Jelinek, who owns a number of places in town, one of them being Parlor City, which is down there in Nubo as well. He's getting on in his years a little bit, and he's really, really passionate about saving these older buildings. And he came in, and I mean, the ideal was basically, for all intents and purposes, going to be demolished. It was flooded in 2008 and then again in 2016, if you remember, when they put the HESCO barrier right there and let that side flood. So it had been flooded twice. It was in horrible shape. But he came in and he said, no, this is too special to let go. And he restored the beautiful, magnificent ceiling. And then there's a mosaic. When you enter the building, there's a mosaic on the floor. Updated everything, modern HVAC, electrical, plumbing, all of that. And saved the building. Now, from there, he didn't really build anything out on the inside. He just kind of left it a big space. And it was, he rented it out for events and whatnot. But it wasn't really, it just wasn't really taken off. As you may know, we have actually a ton of event centers in this town. It just wasn't really going anywhere. Anyways, we put it up for sale and I took a look at it. And we're going to segue now into how I got into this. So I was running, I was working for a group called the FNF, Fun Not Fancy Restaurant Group here in town. They've really grown over the past couple of years. I kind of started with them, right as they were first kind of starting. We opened LP Street Food, and then we opened MoCo Game Room and Hot Dog Bar down there in the Irish District. And I ran that as the GM. Now, part of what they had me do there was book a lot of live music. The location of the old Mahoney's, and Dennis Mahoney had music there for decades. I wanted to be booking live music. I realized just instantly that was where I needed to be. Less on the bar and restaurant side and more on the bar and entertainment side of the industry. After a couple of years, I was looking to really do it on my own. Put a feeler out for a space that could be turned into, a live music venue. And that's when the ideal came up. I toured it, and it was my place. That was my building. So we did the deal, and then I did the build out on the inside. I did the whole, the beautiful bar. So I designed that after turn of the century saloons. That beautiful kind of library cabinet case back bar, and then the stage and the seating wall, sound booth. So yes, John was very pleased with the way that I respected the history of the building with the build out itself. I was very pure with the aesthetic. So I'm very, very proud of that.
Yeah, it is a very gorgeous building. I'll have to post pictures on the social channels so people can see it. What has been your greatest challenge as a business owner?
Oh, man. I feel like we touched on it a little bit with team building. getting the right people, you know, that you can trust, that you can rely on in the right places, takes a lot of time and, takes trial and error, as we just discussed. So that's been a challenge, because the other thing here is that I went from running a 60 cap bar and grill essentially to running a 250 person capacity, fully fledged live music venue with bands coming in and out, touring bands, national touring acts, a 32 foot long bar, with over 100 different liquors. So I suddenly just jumped up the scale of what I was doing vastly, and was not fully prepared for the workload. I thought I could do it all. I was before. But I cannot physically. And so again, releasing some of that control and then getting that team underneath me has been, probably, you know, my biggest challenge, but, not a bad one in any respects. Just it's something that takes time. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that's a learning curve for everyone who goes into their own business, because even if you come from that industry, you kind of go in thinking, well, I've basically done it all. I know how to do it all. But then, you know, you open the business and all of a sudden you have to wear all these new hats. You have to be doing the finances and the marketing and the planning and the hiring and the firing. And it's a whole new world. So I know that those ideals that you came up with of freedom, beauty, truth, and love, they are plastered in the building. They have come out and kind of been seen through various events and experiences that I want to talk about. But can you share a little bit about where those came from, why you picked them, and just a little bit about how those ideals impact you and your business?
Have you seen the movie Moulin Rouge with Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor?
Yes, it's one of my favorites.
Okay, that's where it comes from.
Okay.
So the ideal is my Moulin Rouge. In that movie, there's a number of songs. You see it plastered kind of all over the different scenes. It's freedom, beauty, truth, and love. Those are the ideals of the Bohemian Revolution. And as you know, the ideal is in New Bohemia District. And so I thought it just all tied in beautifully. And those are ideals that I really, truly try to live my life by. Freedom, beauty, truth, and love. And not, you know, through those, you get to things like diversity and respect and trust and whatnot and all of those other things. But it starts with those basics. And I think that we need a reminder of those basics, you know, a lot, more now, I think, really than maybe recently. You know, I'm about to be 34, and in my lifetime, I feel like I've just seen kind of a degradation a little bit of you know, some of those things that unite us, those core ideals that unite us, and that's what they are. It's particularly in the art world. Now, beauty may be one that is not totally necessary, but makes life better. That's the space that I operate in is the arts and entertainment. And so it just freedom, beauty, truth, and love just feeds into everything I try to do down there. So yeah, Moulin Rouge, that's where those come from.
I love that. It is a little bit of a Moulin Rouge vibe hanging out at the ideal. You kind of get that good, I don't know, Ewan McGregor should be hanging out in the corner buying me cocktails.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Well, as you noted, so I have no TVs in there. I have no public Wi-Fi.
Not to side rant, but I love going into a space where there's not a TV on every wall, because that is just the worst. You're trying to talk to someone and your eyes are darting and their eyes are darting. And I got a little ADHD anyway, so you're trying to focus, but there's stuff going on. And I love that at the ideal, you really highlight your not just your entertainers, but also the patrons who are visiting. That really is the star of the show.
Absolutely. Look, the formula has never changed. We've been doing this for thousands of years, drinking alcohol and listening to music and hanging out. It's only since we've gotten away from that, I think, that all of our problems have come up. So if we can just get back to that, that's where we connect. So yeah.
And I think we need more of that too. I feel like that's one place where there's just not as much conflict, you know? And I think about kind of growing up in my home, we were a big TV family. And part of my affinity for watching television shows was that that was such a happy place where all four of us got along. Because we're focused on a show and the plot lines and getting into the characters. And it was something that not just brought us together when we were watching or being entertained, but also something that we could talk about afterwards. We shared that experience of being able to talk about different episodes. And I feel like that's something that is so important in a community of, if you're sitting there, you're listening to music and you're just kind of jamming out and rocking, you don't really care what the person next to you, like who they voted for or who they pray to or like what they're wearing. It doesn't matter because you're just having fun. And also, I think that we have so much stress and tension, just being able to have a pretty cocktail and listen to a good band and just chill for a night. Mm-hmm. I feel like it has a huge impact on the community. And we talked a little bit about how the values impact alignment or how you hire based on values and how that attracts people. But I want to talk a little bit about how values can also deter conflict and misalignment. So specifically, you hosted a Smoke and Mirrors ball recently, and it was
I'm with this. This is exciting. Yes.
Such a fun event. It was actually the first drag ball that I'd ever been to. I went with a date and they thought it was hilarious that I grew up near LA and I lived in Boston and I had to come to the middle of Iowa to experience my first drag show.
Yeah. Okay.
So I loved it. I didn't know what to expect, but I got all dressed up and it was such a fun time. And there was a little bit of hate coming through the inbox leading up to the event. And it was something that had not even crossed my mind. And I come from a very religious background, like grew up very conservatively. So those types of messages, I can say the denomination that I came from didn't necessarily, we weren't the people who shouted out the hate mail, but it was also sort of believed, kind of murmured.
Yeah.
So I'm not unfamiliar with that world and where people are coming from. And I hadn't even crossed my mind when I bought the tickets of there's a lot of hate coming through. And for me, I immediately thought, all right, what kind of haters are Iowans? Are they, do I have to be concerned for my safety? Is this going to be an unsafe event? And I think that that is really a shame that we even have to have that thought of entertainment and, you know, just being able to sing and dance and drink and laugh, that that's even some place that we would have to think about being unsafe. So I really appreciated how you responded to that, how you handled it. It was a super fun event. It was very edifying. And I think one of the best moments was having the performers really show their gratitude for creating the space for them to perform and the audience sharing that gratitude. And there was a moment where you kind of stood up on the bar and it was like this rally cry of like, yes. And it's so funny because that really just entertaining, drinking, dancing, singing, that should not be a rally cry kind of a thing. But it was a beautiful experience, and I would love to hear your perspective of sort of, you pushed back really hard with these are the ideals that we focus on. This is what we curate as a space, and if you don't like it, you don't have to be involved. Yeah. It wasn't, you didn't respond hatefully or escalating. So I'm rambling at this point, but just share a little bit about your perspective of what that was like as a business owner to receive those messages and kind of have that impact your business.
So I love that you're asking me about this because I love that you're asking me about this because this is really worthy, I think, of a full length interview was this experience with the Smoke and Mirrors ball, which by the way, was such a resounding success that we are actually going to trademark Smoke and Mirrors as a brand and bring it back on at least a biannual basis. So I've been talking to the one queen who organized everything. And that's exactly what we're going to do. But so smoke and mirror. So I had it, first of all, when I sat down her name is Angela Cavalier. It's Alan Daniels performing as Angela Cavalier, and I'm going to refer to him as Angela throughout the course of this because Angela was the one, frankly, who was present for the whole thing. So when I sat down with Angela, she goes, you know, look, drag has become a loaded term. And so I want to emphasize the fact that this is illusion. This is drag. This is performing as something that we are not. Okay. So I want to emphasize that. And I do not want to use the word drag anywhere. So that's where we came up with the smoke and mirrors, a night of illusion. And we kind of thought that was that, right? You know, we kind of thought, okay, you know, we've taken the loaded terms out of it and away we go. Well, the online community has something different to say. Unfortunately, it's become okay to troll people online, to just spew venom and vitriol. Unfortunately, obviously, when we, you know, without naming names, but we all know who they are as leaders, or political leaders have made it, you know, okay to do that. And there were actually, to be honest with you, I did some geolocating, and there was nobody from around here. It was people from out of state that were going online, and they were. This lasted for weeks. I lost some sleep over it. I was getting messages, direct messages into my inbox, and as well as public comments on the postings about the show and whatnot. And I kind of sat on it for a couple of weeks. I asked some colleagues, friends, family, what I should do. And, you know, it all came back to, what do we stand for? Right? And again, going back to those ideals, you know, that's what we stand for. And you cannot honestly sit here and tell me that you stand for freedom and love when you do anything but that. Anyway, without getting too far into it, I think it comes from both sides. It's just become such a toxic situation, unfortunately. But I took a stand. I finally took a stand. I said, you know what? I am going to draw my line in the sand here and say, this is where we're planting our flag. And you can either get around it or you can get away, but this is what we're doing. And you are not going to cow us, you know, into submission. Or, I mean, you know, some of the queens, they you know, came to me and said, can you, we're almost to the point where we're starting to feel uncomfortable. Maybe we should cancel. And I said, look, girls, you can either let them win, or you can go through with it. And we can plant our flag. And another really cool thing that happened right towards the end there, when things were really getting to a fever pitch online, was a veterans group came forward and they said, Kenyon, we will send our guys in. They will all be in regular plain clothes. And we will make sure that you and your patrons are safe. So what you don't know is that you were extremely safe and protected that night. They were watching the entire perimeter of the building. They were inside the building as well, but they were all dressed fabulously. But they stepped forward, and to see, you know, a group of, this was military guys, you know, come forward and be like, hey, no, actually, we're going to protect the queens. We are going to plant this flag together, was one of the neatest things to come out of it. It was amazing. And in fact, I have had conversations with that gentleman, the leader of that group, since then. And he was just bowled over by the unity and the solidarity of that event, and really wants to be a part of what's going on at the Ideal, and has offered he and his guys help on some manual labor projects and whatnot. But yeah, But that's what you actually don't know. And what I would really like to share publicly is that a veterans group came forward and said, yeah, so we went and fought in a war to, you know, protect your freedom. And so we're going to do the same thing now. And the ideal was perhaps the safest place to be, that night. So that was really, really cool. Really special.
It was a very cool experience. And I think, so I, like I said, grew up very religiously. I didn't leave that world until my 30s. And so it's sort of been a new part of discovery. And what has been interesting is just experiencing things that were so heavily villainized, if not just dramatized. And I didn't really know what to expect. But the way that it was talked about in my childhood, I don't know what I thought, that, I don't know, people were going to be like doing it doggy style on the stage. No idea. Like, that's kind of how people talk about it. And it was just a show.
Yes.
People dressed in costume, singing, dancing and lip syncing. And it was like any other night. And what was crazy to me was just all of the noise and the opinions, regardless of what I have ever believed in the past is right or wrong, regardless of what anyone believes is right or wrong, whatever you want to believe, whatever, to spend energy being concerned about people singing on a stage in a state that you're not even in just feels like a waste of energy. It feels like that is not productive to whatever deity you're following, whatever ideals you're following. That does not seem like a productive way to contribute anything to society or to prevent anything bad from society. And I think it was just a very interesting experience to kind of sit with all of that past in my head of, I understand, like, how people feel about this. I understand that there are real dangers for people who disagree with you. And how crazy is that when you could just be singing and dancing and, you know, letting
100%. And, you know, here's the deal. And I'm so sorry. Is it Sarah? Is that, is that your name? Okay. Sarah. Frankly, for people to sit there on their computers and do that is inherently un-American. And these are the same people who will sit there and say that they are the biggest patriots and whatever. And that's not the American project. The American project was to offer a place, a safe harbor, and for people of all different backgrounds and religions and creeds and colors to live in peace with one another. And I'm very proud of, you know, our country and what we stand for and, or what we should stand for. And I'm here to stand for it, you know? And, I think that's what we were doing was we were exercising that night. We were exercising our freedoms and our expressions as Americans and as fellow countrymen, you know, in a magnificent space. And it was just a beautiful thing, Sarah. And to know, I hope that knowing now what you know, that the fact that we had hardened veterans that night there watching over us, gives you even more, you know, warm fuzzies and feelings of solidarity. That's what America should be. That's what this country should be. That's what our community should be. And it really starts at the local level, just like that. You know, I don't have any, illusions about, you know, being the next president of the United States or anything, but if I can set an example in the community, I think, you know, I think I've done my part. So that's super important to me. Like I said, I come from a conservative background and, you know, you know, America, you know, whatnot and patriotism and all that. But nowhere is it more fully on display than, you know, for example, that night when you have people of vastly different, really political persuasions and whatnot, coming together and just having a good time, Sarah, just having a good time together. So, and the other thing I want to touch on is that show, that drag show, we went to great lengths to keep it really not sexualized or anything. Now you can certainly go to drag shows that are a little bit, you know, a lot more racy and whatnot. But again, because it's become so politicized and weaponized, we wanted to keep it really classy and say, hey, you know, this is the art of drag. It's been around for thousands of years. I mean, since ancient Greece, at least.
Well, and even if you take drag out of it, just dressing up in costume, there are many years of theater where men were dressed up as women because women couldn't be in those roles. Whether or not you call it drag, dressing up in costume or, you know, all of that, that's been around forever.
Yeah. Exactly. There's nothing new going on here. The only new thing going on here is all the venom and vilification and vitriol that, you know, we seem to think is the greatest expression of who we are as Americans. And it's just like, oh my God, this is so wrong in so many ways. And so, you know, I'm just trying to do it right.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, just going back to diversity and opening it up, I feel like there's this kind of argument going on in business culture. And I actually just watched a video clip of Kevin O'Leary talking about Mark Cuban, two different members of Shark Tank. They both have very different belief systems around money and business. So Mark Cuban made a comment about how being woke is good for business. And Kevin O'Leary feels very much, you should not be woke. You should, you know, not have any views. It's all about money. So they both have their own reasoning, their own argument. And they were talking about businesses like, who is it? Is it Budweiser, Bush, the beer company? Their big thing going on. They lost a ton of profits. Target had a bunch of issues. So there's, you know, we're in this weird space where companies are feeling like they need to speak out. And then their shareholders were like, no, you can't speak out. But we live in a world of internet and social media where it's increasingly difficult to hide who you are and what you believe. It's sort of becoming a part of who we are. And I think what's interesting is this argument that if we connect ideals to anything that has to do with a personal belief or how the world operates, we're going to lose money. We're going to lose shareholders. We're going to lose whatever. But I think that from most experiences that I've had or that I've seen, even the businesses that maybe initially turned some people away by having a certain view or culture or stance, whether or not it's a political belief or a gender belief or a religious belief, whatever it is, I feel like every business or culture is going to have a polarizing quality. And it's by leaning into what type of people you want that's going to create the greatest profit in your business.
So, yes.
I know you mentioned this was such a success that you're doing it again and it attracted more people. And I would guarantee not everyone that came to this event comes from a certain belief or culture. It's all over the place. So what was your experience of, I don't know if this is the first time you have, but what was that experience of sort of being a little bit more vocal about those polarizing qualities and how that affected your business and your revenue of your business?
Well, to me, it was very simple. We're going to do this, you know, whether you like it or not, because the ideals that underlie what we're doing are correct. You know, and so I really fell back on those ideals and felt very confident that, you know, what we stand for is right and it's worth speaking up for. You know, and at the end of the day, behind the business is the people. So, and people have, you know, views and whatnot and beliefs and whatnot. So I don't really think you're ever good. That's like saying, you know, there's such a thing as objective journalism. Well, behind every story is a person. So of course you're going to, I mean, and behind every person is a certain perspective. So I don't think you can ever really get away from, you know, like it's a totally objective business. So the question now becomes, what do you stand for? And I think there's right and wrong in this world. And as long as what you are doing is right and underlies those values, our values, freedom, beauty, truth, and love, then you're gonna win in the long run. You know, the right always triumphs in the end. The right thing, the kindest thing, the loving thing, that always triumphs in the end. And in the end, especially in my industry, that it's literally built on people coming together. that's frankly what's going to be make me the most money. So it goes hand in hand. And in my specific industry, it really behooves me to lean into those values, because that's those values are what bring people together. So it felt good to just honestly, Sarah, to just kind of like stake out my position and say, yeah, no, actually, this is what we're doing. This is our position. And if you don't like it, then that's fine. But I also, you know, I also did have a little fun with it. I got a little smart assy online, which without being hateful, without being, you know, spiteful or negative. I did have a little fun with that, and people kind of liked that, you know. But that's just it. The ideals that we stand for are the right ones, and they win in the end, and in the end, that's what makes me the most money. So it all goes hand in hand, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was a good point you made, that it's virtually impossible to not be a polarizing person or polarizing business. We're all going to bring ourselves it's impossible to detach from the way we see the world, from what our values are. Those are going to show up regardless of whether or not we lead with it. And it's one of my favorite questions. I work in brand strategy, and one of my favorite questions I ask every client is about their polarizing qualities. And I ask them to pick celebrities that they would love to represent their brand, and three celebrities that they would never let represent their brand. And I kind of have a little fun with it, where there's a few people that come up almost every single time on one side or the other. And one example is the Kardashians. They are almost always on the list of an answer. And what is interesting is how many people will say, yeah, I would never let the Kardashians represent my company. I don't like them. I don't want anything to do with them. However, they're one of the most successful brands in the country. Mm. Just they are who they are. It doesn't matter if people like them, don't like them. People are talking about them, and they have this kind of cool, calm confidence where they're not going anywhere, regardless of what you think about them. And I think that the biggest life lesson any of us can take from that is that the businesses that really get in trouble, even the ones that we mentioned earlier that are kind of in trouble, are the ones that flip-flop. They're the ones that are trying, air quote, to do the popular thing or the good thing. They're the ones that are wishy-washy about it. They're trying to follow, you know, grow the money for the stakeholders. They're trying to follow the trend rather than just showing up and being who they are. And exactly. I'm not saying that you can't evolve. It's completely possible to show up as you are, and then you have more data and you realize like, oh, I was wrong about a few things. And then you kind of explain that and you move on and move forward. But there's, I think, a lot of power that comes from just knowing those values inherently and living that out and not being swayed. If someone else comes in and says, I don't get this, I don't like this, I don't understand it, it doesn't make sense to me. That's okay. You don't have to be my customer. You don't have to be my audience.
Right.
I'm not going to fight back. I'm not going to escalate. I'm not going to create a drama that doesn't need to be there. I just am who I am. My business is what it is. And you either want to be a customer or you don't want to be.
Exactly, Sarah. So I want to touch on two sides to that. So I'm here. I am who I am. You can take it or leave it. Now, where businesses get in trouble, where people and politicians get in trouble, is when they then try to push that on other people. So no, you need to, you know, recognize me and as such and such, and validate me as such and such. Look, you're gonna have people that don't view you as valid, and that's just is what it is. So there's a certain point at which you can overstep that a little bit. So I think that's where businesses get into a little trouble as well. And then that leads me into your flip-flopping point. So I think that's where Bud Light got into a lot of trouble, because they tried to jump on what they saw as a trend. And number one, it's just not real. Everybody knows that Bud Light, you know, has a certain demographic that drinks a product, and that's okay. But trying to jump on a trend and, you know, be something that you're not is going to be immediately recognized as disingenuous. Yep. Immediately recognizes disingenuous. But then at the same time, if you are who you are and you push it too far, you know, down people's throats, then that's going to push people away as well. It really is just a live and let live, you know, when it comes to business. As long as you have, you know, a product that's selling, then you're good. When it comes to business, you're good.
Yeah. So that goes back to those values of, you know, freedom, truth, love. Like, you got to just be who you are. And I think people want autonomy. People don't want to feel like they are being told who to be or what to believe or where to go. And on either end, and this is not just about drag or not drag. This could be literally any issue. It could even be a non-huge issue. Like when I think about polarizing qualities, I'll sometimes use Chip and Joanna Gaines as an example. I don't think there's really anything offensive about them, but she has a very specific style. Everything is white and gray and shiplap. You either like that or you don't. So she's leaned into who she is, and you're either going to be attracted to her or you're not. And I think that a lot of times it's really just about taking a breath and not making a big deal out of something that doesn't have to be a big deal.
What
I think sometimes when we fight back, even if it's in the name of having healthy ideals or like being right or doing the right thing, when we fight back or lean into it, it makes an issue out of something that didn't have to be an issue.
Exactly. You got it. You got it. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So it's really as simple and unfortunately as complicated in this day and age as that. So, you know, and it's important to remember that not everybody is going to, just going back to, not everybody's gonna like you or going to like, you know, what you stand for or going to even view you as valid. And you know what? That's a them problem. Okay. That's a them problem. And there's nothing that you can even do about that. So, you know, this desire to like, I don't know, get people to, everybody's got to, you know, like each other and get along, you know, that's actually not the case. And we can be okay with that. We can be okay with it.
Well, the most important or best things I think we can do is become comfortable with not being liked. And it doesn't have to be to the extreme of, well, F you, if you don't like me, like it doesn't have to be like that. But I think that sometimes it just comes from that place of insecurity or trauma where we feel like everyone needs to like us or there's something wrong with us. And you really stop and think about it. You don't like everyone. Like, I don't like everyone.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people I don't like, and I'm totally okay with us not being friends, not talking. And kind of on that note, I want to segue into the idea of, I guess, kind of balancing that line between standing confident in who you are, but also maybe sometimes taking some constructive feedback if you do need to adjust. So you host a lot of open jam karaoke nights where literally anyone can perform. Mm-hmm. So as a business owner, how do you balance encouraging people to show up as their full selves, be who they are, perform their little hearts out, but also considering talent and not just
that is a great question,
driving people out of the building, which I can happen sometimes.
That is a fantastic question. And it is definitely a balancing act. So for our jams, we run our jams differently, I think, than anybody else does here in town. And you have to sign up for a time slot. Okay. And once your time is up, it's up. You're off stage and the next person goes up. So that person can suck, you know, but they're only up for a certain amount of time. And then they have to get off stage, and they cannot, for our jams, you can only sign, we do it for 3 hours, and you can sign up a maximum of once per hour. And then our karaoke is run kind of the same way. Now there are a couple of, people who I've just had to kind of gently take aside and say, hey, so, you know, like the ideal, like we have a professional stage here and your voice gets pumped through, you know, a massive sound system. And, I don't want to discourage you singing your little heart out, but maybe it would be best if you just did it in the comfort of your own home, still come to karaoke. We still want to hang out with you. But, you know, I just have a business to look after. And I'm serious. I've had that conversation before. And they all, they maybe are a little bit, maybe a little bit feelings hurt, but they get it, you know? And, so it's definitely something I don't want to say I keep a tight lid on it. Like I'm keeping something from happening, but at the same time, I do have to maintain a certain level of quality. I have to be welcoming, of course, encouraging, of course, but not all of us are talented, Sarah. Not all of us are, again, not all of us are going to be liked. Not all of us can get up there and just be the next, I don't know, Celine Dion or Beyonce or whatever. And that's okay. That's okay.
Well, that's part of self-awareness too, because I know I've been to karaoke bars where people have actually left because there are people there who think they're trying out for American Idol and they're actually really good. And then there's, you know, the people like me who maybe are okay. And then there's the people who like, maybe you're like me. I don't know. Maybe I suck. Like the people who can't carry a tune and we will leave because we're like, oh, this is a really talented, like I'm not following this American rock star. So I feel like it goes on both ways and kind of being aware of who are you performing with. And if you are on a stage where people are exceptionally talented, having that self-awareness to say, yes, I can keep up with this or, you know, push for this, strive for this versus I know my strengths. I know my lane. I'm going to go over here with this group that are just getting drunk and having fun and talent is not the top consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where I really lean back on my hosts. And I will say, so my host for karaoke, his name is Vidal. He's been doing it for years and years. He is so good about, because when we start our karaoke on Wednesdays, we have our core group of regulars who are amazing. And they go up there and they start the night. And a lot of people have your same reaction. They're like, we can't sing. We're not that good. Vidal is very, very good about going around with his sign up sheet, you know, saying, hey, you know, please get signed up. No, of course you're not going to be that as good as that person that just went. And that's okay. That's all right. My jams are the same way. So that's hosted by the house band. Two of the three guys, actually, no, all three of them are teachers. So they're very encouraging. So you really lean back on your host for those sorts of events. And I feel like a lot of, especially karaoke, you just have that guy sitting in there in his chair and he's just like punching buttons and, you know, next person, you know, you really need active engagement on behalf of your artist and the, you know, the people that you're bringing in to run these events. So that's just, you know, a little bit from the technical side of things. You know, get your right people in there and they will manage the situation effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as the business owner, as the people leading it, the people that are there, you kind of have to create the energy that you want to attract.
Yes.
People, you know, like we talked about, you want to be with people that you feel comfortable with. And so when you walk into a room, you're going to look around and you're immediately going to think, no one here looks like me. This is not the energy that vibes with me. I don't belong here. And you can have a really cool person remove themselves from that situation. And so I think that that's a part of creating the company culture is sort of setting that tone of this is the energy that exists in this space. This is what we're going after.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I work with my staff a lot on that. You know, the second that you walk in, I want you to be greeted. Hey, how are you? Oh my gosh. Welcome to the Ideal. Please take a seat. I'll be right out with you or whatever, you know, whatever it is. I had a couple of babies that worked for me and just young employees who, you know, guests would walk into the Ideal and they would just kind of, no, you have to be active. You have to be actively asserting that energy that you want to receive, that you want to receive. It starts with you. You hit it on the head. And, you know, that's why, you know, what I do there, and I've really tried to take a step away from bartending and really kind of get into what, you know, I like to call hosting, where literally all I'm doing is creating that energy because it does take a lot. It does take a lot. And people get, I don't know if lazy is the right word, but they just don't pay attention to it. They don't give that takes PLC and fostering that. It takes energy. It doesn't just happen. You have to actively assert the energy that you want in the room. So it's a big part of what we do down there. So.
Absolutely. So to close out the conversation, for the business owner or business leader who is maybe getting started with trying to think about, how do I even start to think about what my values or ideals are? How do I come up with this? How do I implement it? What would you say is the best place to start?
Okay. Think about what's important to you. Start with, when you wake up in the morning, what's important to you? A cup of coffee? Great. Okay. So how do you kind of deconstruct from there? How do you make that cup of coffee happen? You know, obviously, you know, whatever it is, start as simple as that and work backwards from there. And the values that get you to that, we're just, you know, using an example here, the values that get you to that cup of coffee, the values that get you to that end result are what you want to then start with. So just think about what you want to put out into the world. And I'm not talking about, yes, start with the product, start with a cup of coffee, but behind that, I hate saying this because I feel like this has become so cliche, but what is the difference? What is the impact that you want to have? It goes beyond a product. A product is the physical manifestation of everything that's behind that. So, I don't know that that's a really good answer to your question at all, because I wish I could just say, hey, go read this book and all your answers are there. But it's not. And my point is that it is individualized. Now, there are certain universal values that we can all get behind. But in your specific line of work, you know, that's all yours. And so you get to say, this is what I stand for. And this is what I don't stand for. And then work your product back from there. So I don't know. That's my advice, I suppose.
I think that's actually a really fantastic answer. I might steal that when I'm explaining values. That's so much better than what I tell people about values. And I love that, because I'm thinking about, okay, how do I make my coffee? And I am a pour over girl. So I value the time and process.
The ritual. You like the ritual.
I like the ritual. I like the process. I like to be thorough. I have a curiosity. I'm always trying different things. I'm always looking for fair trade. You know, but one of my core qualities, I've got curiosity.
Okay. So you just immediately laid out a whole, like, that's basically an entire mission statement right there. Right. Yeah.
All my core values come out first thing in the morning, the way that I make my coffee. I am never going to look at my morning coffee the same way. You just rocked my world.
That's awesome.
Well, Kenyon, thank you so much for sharing your time and your stories. Such a joy talking to you. For anyone listening, would love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions. Shoot us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determine when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey, successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. Hey. All this weight on my arms, need both flex. In this race, put behind, need most steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look. look back. Successfulish, you can see how the contrast failures and wins. Use the past and I bounce back. You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see. Have a teacher me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We were made unique, gotta use a gift collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regressive, you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success every moment. Successfully. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.